Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
Well, good morning. Thank you for tuning in and catching my drift. Good to be here. Glad you're tuning in. And my guest in the studio today, resident libertarian John Hargenrader, joining me, columnist for the Current newspaper and the Daily Drift blog site. So, John, welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Gary.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. It's been another interesting week, and we'll go through your viewpoints, my viewpoints, and, of course, you, the listener, 734-822-1600. Your views and opinions are as important, if not more so, than ours. So feel free to call in this morning if you feel like it, or you can email gary@thedailydrift.com. Now, what we do on The Drift every Sunday is go through the week's past events and talk about the opinions that we have on it and, of course, your opinions as well. And you can catch the information we put on The Daily Drift by going to www.thedailydrift.com. That's the daily blog and website. It's an amalgamation of news and opinion that you should take a look at because you don't find it elsewhere. So I spend a lot of time during the week putting that on the web for you to stay informed. Let's take care of our sponsor this half hour is The Rock Shop, by appointment only at this point. ROCK-SHOP, ShOPPE.com. And you can reach Marco and Helena Scapatici at 734-455-5560. Great place to Rock Shop. They have an abundance of hardscape supplies for retaining walls, paving, brick pavers, and that sort of thing, as well as statuary, fountain works, and other stuff, boulders, just about anything you would want for hardscape. This time of year, you probably should start planning because spring is right around the corner. So you can call them, 734-455-5560. Now, before we do anything else, too, I had a press release come from a very good friend of mine, Dan Wollahan. And Dan is the new chair of the Livingston County Republican Party. So he sent me
So Lana Tice has stepped aside,
She stepped aside, exactly. That's what it says last night. The Livingston County Republicans lead the party through the 2013-2014 election cycle. And Dan is the new chair. Jennifer Hensley is the vice chair. Carol Bullion as treasurer. Richard Grimes as the Mertz treasurer. And Joan Johnson as secretary. So Wollahan replaces Lana Tice.
Well, you know, I think that's a great thing for the local GOP. I've always felt that those that lead the party should not be running or in elected office because it distorts a little bit the independence. And that's actually a policy of some policy, you know, parties.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is too. And Dan's a good guy. He's a real go-getter. I like Dan. He writes for The Current occasionally as well. And he's a new lawyer, you know, so he's gone and done what he needed to do to get qualified to become an attorney. And just an all-around nice guy, very common sense. That's what I like about Dan. So congratulations to him and the rest of the gang there at the Livingston County Republican Party. Now, let's recap a little bit how you and I met. You were running for
county commissioner
as the Libertarian candidate in District 9?
In District 9.
District 9.
District 1 in 2010, District 9 2012.
Right. Now, I like the way we met because you had emailed me something and I kind of took it that you were bashing the Republican Party. I'm like, well, wait a minute, dude. You know, so I emailed you back, and it turned to come out that we're really both libertarians.
I think a lot of local Republicans are.
Yeah, yeah. And so we've cultivated our friendship over the last, I don't know, 6 months, however long it's been. And you, I always like your viewpoints because they make me stop and think. You know, and one of the things that this fiscal cliff, I know we've seemed like we've talked about it to death, but I don't think we've gone into the depths of it. Before, during, and after this debate over the fiscal cliff, my mind's been running up and down. I've changed my opinion depending on the facts that I'm hearing. And, you know, I guess what I come out of it is there was a tax increase. Is it going to kill us, that tax increase on people over $400,000? What's your opinion?
Well, I think it's going to have an effect in certain sectors of the geographics where those incomes, like in the Northeast, in a lot of cases, are high earned incomes rather than unearned and you know, dividends and capital gains.
Yeah, so say somebody living in New York or in L.A. or San Francisco who's working for a $500,000 salary and they're paying a god-awful rent or mortgage on their property, they're going to hurt.
Yeah, and I think there's a small number of people, but certainly you go to Long Island or you go to Manhattan or you go up into the Northeast in Boston, you'll see that, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 salaries, those people do make some money in that regard. And just like us, as we all are, we tend to spend pretty much everything we take in. And so they have mortgages and kids in college and everything.
So in the
else.
End, I guess we ended up taxing all those liberals.
That's right. They voted in the Northeast.
Them, right? Yeah. Good for you, Mr. Obama.
Or one could look at it that maybe they'll move out of the expensive Northeast now and come out to the Midwest.
Or maybe they'll become Republican.
That could be too.
He might have. Which bears a thought. Who won this argument? I mean, Ken Braun at Michigan Capital Confidential had a wonderful story come out, and he's part of the Job Creator Solutions, and I think you can get that at jobcreatorsolutions.com. Ken Braun and Kathy Hoekstra did a nice article on Did Grover Norquist Win the Fiscal Cliff Showdown? And I thought to myself, I saw the headline and I said, are you out of your mind? What are you talking about? And then I remember what I heard his comments after this all fell apart, where he said, you know, and is it sour grapes or is it him trying to pan his way back? This was not a tax increase by all those Republicans because it had already expired.
That's a fair statement, I think.
You know, so in a way, I guess that makes sense.
It sounds like he's backpedaling, but in reality, he's just being factual to his own benefit.
Technically, he is correct. Yes. The taxes had expired, and all they did was bring them back down for some of the people who had expired.
True.
And for me, you know, it's again the perspective of the Republicans. You know, they could have jumped the shark a little bit and gone out ahead of the game and said, you know, if the House had passed John Boehner's Plan B,
right,
you know, million and above get taxed higher, and did nothing else, don't address the spending, whatever, and then passed it and put it in the Senate's court, the people would have said, ah, they're doing something. But they didn't. They just kind of held back and let Obama in the Senate run things, and it just left me once more amazed at the stupidity of the GOP establishment, I guess.
I think you speak directly towards Boehner's leadership skills. And it's he won by one vote his leadership position back.
This time?
Yeah. And so I think if you look at the history of the debate going back to the $250,000 to $400,000 limit, I think most of America – including myself, if you'd have set that limit at a million or a half a million, we really wouldn't have cared where it's set. What we did want to see, though, is an agreement that both people who are willing to negotiate are negotiating in good faith, and that $400,000 limit was on the table a while back. And if Boehner had accepted that at that level or a higher level at that time, they could have moved on to the cuts, at which we never got to. And I think that's really a problem.
Yeah, that's the second part of the story. I mean, the first part for me is the Republicans just miserably failing on the negotiation, miserably failing on the marketing of their solution. And the other part is they never even talked about spending cuts. I mean, the problem here is spending, and spending.
I hate to use an old cliche. I used it with my wife the other night looking at this, and that is the rearranging of the deck chairs on the Titanic. When there's a giant gash in the side and things are going down, here they are worrying about whether the crystal is clean for dinner.
Yeah.
And they never – because they were looking at the minutiae associated with that one element and how it would look in the press, and it does affect people's perception, they failed to – be able to have a strong negotiating position to start looking at real cuts.
Right.
Now, I had the misfortune, the wonderful fortune unfortunately through a family friend who had a relative pass away, of meeting the Undersecretary of the Air Force, who most the undersecretaries are more the operating officers of the different branches of the service, and they're mostly economists, and got a few minutes of a perspective on budget and the military side of it. And the statement was made that, you know, on that branch, because of the nature of technology, they are looking at real meaningful expected reductions of you know, beyond 5% in some of their operating elements as things wind down. So there are realistic, what we called the peace dividend,
yeah,
cuts and the post-Iraq, post-Afghanistan elements that could go into one of the largest sectors of the budget. We heard absolutely nothing about that potential debate.
Right.
And the idea that they savored that for the next 2 months, I hate to say it, but let's not create another invented cliff.
Right.
You know?
Right. And we'll talk about this. Derek, let's take a quick break, and we'll move into this discussion because we got some tracks on that on the way. You're on the Drift.
Is the ClarkCast with Matt Clark.
Economics 101 tells you that, you know, the price should come down as well, but it's not.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
There are other forces in play. The president wants you to pay more for gas. He just said it in that audio soundbite. He wants you to pay more for gas. It's by design.
The ClarkCast, every Sunday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Wham!
DVDs for Vets is asking listeners to donate new or used DVDs for the benefit of military veterans who otherwise cannot easily obtain them on their own. With limited entertainment, vets in rehab can use what many of us take for granted every day. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to DVDsForVets.org. That's DVDs, the number 4, Vets.org.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dave Janda, host of Operation Freedom, broadcasting live from Wham Talk 1600's Freedom Bunker every Sunday from 3 to 5. We are the only operating room in all of radio. Every Sunday in our OR, we dissect current events with the help of guests that NM Media are afraid to bring to light. Our goal is to educate and empower you. I hope you'll join our OR team every Sunday from 3 to 5 right here at Wham Talk 1600.
Yeah!
No matter where you are in the world, whether you have a radio or not, you can listen to Wham Talk 1600. All you need is a computer or even a smartphone. Just go to whamradio.com and click on the Listen Live link. See the latest updates to whamradio.com and be sure to listen live. From Trenton, New Jersey to Monterey, California, Toledo to Ishpeming, Wham Talk 1600 is there, online and streaming live. whamradio.com. You're listening to The Drift on Wham Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back. Thank you for catching The Drift this morning. In the studio with me, John Hargenrader, columnist with The Daily Drift and The Current. So, John, we were talking about this recent fiscal cliff that we went over. And I tried to get Congressman Tim Walberg to come on. He's in the Middle East. He texted me this morning, and he can't make it, obviously. But we do have a radio clip from him about his fiscal cliff. And this is track 3, Derek, so it's the third one there. Let's run that.
I'm extremely disappointed after all the negotiations and effort that went into avoiding the so-called fiscal cliff. The President and Congress again put off meaningful action to reduce spending and secure the future for our children and grandchildren. Again, with our economy struggling, it's clear that Washington missed an opportunity to promote tax and spending policies that'll grow our economy over the long term. I believe the federal government needs to live within its means because trillion-dollar deficits threaten our economy and opportunities for future generations. I continue to support immediate spending reductions, reforming our tax code, and a balanced budget amendment to hold Congress accountable and require fiscal responsibility. It is my hope that this will begin in the next Congress and lead to a long-term solution.
All right, so Tim voted no. He was one of those hard guys, and I was proud of him. But at the same time, I was like, well, did we not work hard enough to come up with some decent, you know? And being one of those hardliners, he's not in Boehner's camp anyway, so he has very little say as far as being on any of those committees. I think we all remember Boehner throwing out some of those hardcore guys a few weeks or months ago out of the committees because they weren't playing along to get along.
Right, the Tea Partiers were pushed out.
Yes, yes.
So, the budget
kudos to Tim for standing up for what he felt was right. And I think Senator Marco Rubio felt the same way. And again, they probably would have voted if there had been any spending cuts at all. I mean, the spending cuts were a dollar of spending cut for $41 in increases. What is it about Washington that they don't understand simple mathematics, I'm guessing?
I guess, you know, I go back to when I became a little bit politically conscious in the early 1980s. And we've talked about spending cuts as – I was a GOP member for many, many years. In my lifetime, I've never seen them. So I think it's – we are somewhat incapable. And as you grow that, there's always territorialism on budget. Now, Mike Rogers, 8th District Republican, one who is somewhat in lockstep over, you know, terrorism and the Iraq War and other elements and also very vocal about spending, he voted in favor. And in his piece in the newspaper, his interview, he said – you know, for Michigan, the extended unemployment benefits were essential. There are a lot of families and good, hardworking people in Michigan, and he's from one of the highest income counties. So it's hard to know whether there was a correct vote in that sense.
Right.
I applaud Mr. Wahlberg for actually speaking up on the spending portion and making it known via his vote that spending has to be addressed. Because like I said, even though you know, Ronald Reagan came to town, I've never seen spending actually go down.
Right, and it's crazy that we don't seem to under. And I think that it really is. Here's something that I put it up on my Facebook. And if you haven't friended me on Facebook, friend me on Facebook. I like to hear from whatever fans I may have or anybody who listens to the show. I put a lot of interesting stuff on my Facebook page, and because I've got a lot of really cool friends who have interesting stuff, so Facebook me on. I'd love to have you as a friend. But there was something I pulled up, and I can't remember where I got it from, so it's not showing up here anymore. But it was Fiscal Cliff put in much better perspective, and I really like this. It said U.S. tax revenue. Well, hold on. What it does is try and take your fiscal budget and put it into a House budget, and now it's for whatever reason, not showing up for me. That's great. I don't need to see that. But anyways, we'll have to skip it because I just lost it. Imagine that. Oh, here it is. It's easier to take a look at what our fiscal mess is when you remove some of those zeros. In this case, we're removing 8 zeros. So look at your fiscal budget like it's your own family budget. If you took the federal budget and did that, you'd have an annual family income of $21,700. Okay, that's our income. But the family spends $38,200, which means you now put $16,500 on your credit card. Now, for those of us in the family, who can put $16,000 a year on the credit card?
Very few.
And how many years can you carry that debt continually putting $16,000 on your credit card? You know, at an income level of $21,000.
Right.
So imagine having an outstanding balance on your credit card of $142,000 when you're only making $21,000 a year.
I heard someone talk about this same piece, maybe in a different way. They reconciled it to Christopher Columbus starting, you know, the trend of coming to America. He left home not knowing where he was going. He went back not knowing where he's been, and he did it all on borrowed money. So if we need to take a look, we know where we've been,
yeah,
and we want to look where we're going now, we need to stop doing it on borrowed money. There's no recourse. As Ron Paul said historically, it will end at some point in time when we can no longer manipulate our currency to hold its value based on the outstanding debt, that it will reconcile itself at some point in time, just as all debt issues do.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and I hate to be one of those guys, you know, who sounds like the doom prophet of doom and gloom. But I know I keep thinking to myself, I want to go and put a year's worth of dry goods and canned goods in my basement, you know, in case the value of the dollar gets turned into nothing and you have to take the wheelbarrows full of money to the store to pick up a loaf of bread.
Right.
You know, and how many of us, if it reaches that point, is my job secure, my real job? Will they just lay me off and say, we don't have any money to pay you, Gary, or here's your wheelbarrow full of money? It's not going to be worth anything.
And I think we've been through that in our lifetime at our age. In the late Carter post-Vietnam era, when we started really printing money, we saw that effect. And, you know, like we talked about before, we had 11 to 14% home mortgage rates. And it inflation that, you know, a normal federal salary increase was running at a pace of 6 or 7% for the inflation cola.
Yeah.
And that you know, had a real effect on people that didn't work for government and didn't get those.
Right. Yeah, what I don't understand is I think this newer generation, those people younger than us, don't understand that. They see interest rates at 3 and 4%, and they're like, oh, you know, that's normal. That's not normal.
It is not normal.
My first house was 11.25%, you know, and that was in the late 80s.
Right.
So, and that was a $24,000 house I bought, and I had a huge payment on it, you know, and it took me forever, and I ended up selling it before I paid it off. You know, it was crazy, and I think people have forgotten. We've been out of that for so long; they've forgotten, and I think that's going to come back. And I hope it doesn't, but I think it is definitely going to come back. So when we talk about the spending limits, we're now talking about this new, the second fiscal cliff, which is the debt ceiling.
Right.
And part of this thing from Facebook was, you know, here's another way to look at the debt ceiling. If you came home and found your house filled to the ceiling with sewage because your sewer's backed up, would you get the sewage out of the house or would you raise the ceiling? You know, you're going to cut the sewer, get the stuff out of the house. I mean, you just can't keep spending money like this. And Barack Obama has already put his little line in the sand. Let's go with track one. This is Barack Obama and then Dave Camp talking about the debt ceiling. Let's go with track one, Derek.
One thing I will not compromise over is whether or not Congress should pay the tab for a bill they've already racked up. If Congress refuses to give the United States the ability to pay its bills on time, the consequences for the entire global economy could be catastrophic. Last time Congress threatened this course of action, our entire economy suffered for it. Our families and our businesses cannot afford that dangerous game again.
When you have no more money in your account and your credit cards are maxed out, then the spending must stop. Well, that's the current financial reality facing America. As we turn our attention toward future discussions on the debt limit and the budget, we must identify responsible ways to tackle Washington's wasteful spending. So as the House returns for the 113th Congress in 2013, our resolution is clear. We're committed to making our economy stronger and healthier and getting our spending under control by making Washington fully accountable to you, the hardworking taxpayers of America. We're going to fight wasteful Washington spending and deliver the accountability you demand. And we call on the President and congressional Democrats to join us in that fight.
Okay, so that was our Michigan Congressman Dave Camp. So he's drawing their line in the sand as well. So we're going to see another battle. I think Obama's, you know, if you go back, he ate up a lot of his street cred pushing this disaster of a fiscal cliff thing through. Mm-hmm. And now we've got the debt ceiling. I'm hoping this is the time that we take a hard look at spending. I don't think Obama's going to. I think he's going to try and play this one out in the media to the best of his ability and just keep rolling the tab up. You know what I mean? I hope that doesn't happen, but I don't see him. Do you see him bending? Oh, that's the end of the break or the start of the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about debt ceiling. And thank you for catching the drift. We'll see you in a bit.
always on the go, driving to work, running errands. How do they keep informed? They listen to Wham! Talk 1600, just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham! For the latest issues discussed by hosts Bill Bennett, Glenn Beck, and Bay Ronex. They stay tuned in for state and local news with Dan Martin, and they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 and advertise your business with Wham! Talk 1600.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carol McHugh. Their Christmas vacation behind them, the first families bid aloha to Hawaii and are winging their way back to Washington and a busy January.
The president, of course, has the inauguration to attend January 21st, but he also has the second part of the fiscal cliff to deal with, particularly the debt ceiling, where Republicans are likely to press him for spending cuts. He has to make a decision soon on how many troops to leave in Afghanistan after 2014. He has cabinet secretaries to announce and get confirmed.
Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz. Hockey fans have reason to cheer. A tentative agreement and a 10-year deal was reached early today that ends the 113-day walkout.
We have the framework of a deal. We have to do the legal work. We have to do the constituent communication work.
Donald Fehr, executive director of the NHL Players Association. No word yet on when the games begin. Fox News. We report.
You decide.
Moms of America, stand up and stop taking abuse from your kids.
I pledge never to let my kid disrespect me ever again.
I pledge to stop letting my daughter walk all over me.
I pledge to stop living in fear of my son's anger.
I pledge never to feel like a bad parent ever again. Because I'm not.
I pledge to stop letting my child's behavior control my home.
I pledge to be a mom with kids who listen. A total transformation mom.
I'm Janet Lehman, co-creator of the Total Transformation Program. We created the Total Transformation to help parents with difficult child behavior. Now I'm giving it away free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free.
Call 1-888-912-1681. 1-888-912-1681. Call now. That's 1-888-912-1681. 1-888-912-1681.
Every Sunday morning for Wham's Weekend Worship. At 9 a.m., it's the Lutheran Hour, followed by the Christian Science Sentinel at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, we join Bethlehem United Church of Christ for their live weekly service. Finally, we visit the First Presbyterian Church of Ann Arbor from 11 to noon. Start your week off right with Wham Talk 1600.
Hey, Roan here, inviting you to join me for the Bunk Induction Music Show. My radio show has a high music IQ, and I know you do too. We're a perfect match, babe, you and me. I want you to join me right here for the finest wig-singing rock, hip-shaking soul music, and industrial strength rhythm and blues. It's the rockin'est show on the radio. It's the Bunk Induction Music Show.
Join Theron for the rockin'est show on the radio. It's the Bunk Induction Music Show. Every Sunday night at 7 p.m., right here on Wham! Talk 1600.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back. Thank you for catching my drift this Sunday morning. In the studio with me, John Hargenrader, columnist with The Current and The Daily Drift. John, so we were just listening to President Obama drawing his line in the sand on the upcoming fiscal cliff two, the debt ceiling, and Dave Camp, Michigan congressman, saying we need to cut spending. We can't just keep raising the debt, the credit card limit, basically, which is what we're doing. I don't think any of our credit card companies would give us that kind of leeway. So who is it?
Not for long.
Yeah. So, and during the break, we were just talking. So who is our credit card company, and why are they going to go ahead and give us the okay to raise our debt ceiling yet again?
It is remarkable. Part of it is, like we talked about over the break, the Federal Reserve assisting in subsidizing the borrowing of the debt.
Which is basically
printing money artificially under the table.
Yeah, that's the quantitative easing.
Yeah. Okay. And a great name for creating a future mechanism of inflation, isn't it? Quantitative easing.
I wonder if I can use that with my credit card company. Can I call the credit card company and say, I need a little help. Can you quantitatively ease me an extra couple grand?
I bet they would do that if your children were liable for your debts. And so we've gone to a system of bankruptcy protection that protects people like your children from things that you incur in your lifetime. It didn't protect Thomas Jefferson's daughters.
Right.
They lost Monticello the minute he died because of his debts. Now, if you could convince the debtors that they can use generational skip debt to resolve their issues in their lifetime after they're dead, well, then of course you could probably get Bank of America to lend you money, provided your kids are good credit risks.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a great point. I never thought about it. That's exactly right. They were indenturing our children.
Yes.
To our own debt. We're enslaving our children to pay a debt that we're incurring.
And banks used to do that with elderly people when the laws allowed debt to be burdened onto descendants.
Right. And that's not only shameful, that's, in my book, criminal. How we can continue to do this. I mean, we're at 16.4 is the debt ceiling, 16.4 trillion. We've had this discussion before. That's eight extra zeros on there.
Right.
Compared to what we have been getting. 734-822-1600, if you want to call in and get on this conversation, love to hear your comments on the debt ceiling or the fiscal cliff or anything that we're talking about this morning. Or email Gary at the Daily Drift. And let me take care of business real quick here. Our sponsor this half hour is the Current newspaper. The January edition is already out. We're working on February at this point. If you want to grow your business like we've grown the newspaper, call us. Call Sam Iaquinto, 734-323-0777, or go to currentonline.com, CourantOnline.com, and click on the advertising, and you'll get all the information you need there. So when I took over the Current as editor, we were at 5,000 circulation. We're now at 35,000 circulation. And pages, I think we were 12 pages when we took over. Now we're anywhere from 28 to 40 pages. So a lot bigger paper than it was. And you can grow your business by growing with us. Call Sam Iaquinto, 734-323-0777. It's amazing.
And you know, you're a perfect example. You mentioned earlier how we came to know each other. Your circulation is extended now far beyond its original geographics, and I see it all over Livingston County, and I see people reading it as I go in to get my hair cut and things like that. And I have to tell you, Gary, in looking at the last few editions, and not just because I've come to know you, the readership's gone up for a good reason. And wonderful advertising mechanism and a wonderful paper to read. And also you'll find that, at least within the last year, the diversity of people that are writing for you is enlarged.
Right.
And people would say historically before you took over, it was more of a right-leaning paper. But you're very open to printing things about other topics and other viewpoints provided people bring them to you. And you did that for me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I get, you know, probably two or three emails or calls a month from people who are like, I don't want this coming to my house. And I'm like, well, it's bulk mailed, so I can't do anything about it, throw it away or recycle. But when I ask them, what don't you like about it, they'll say, well, you're too conservative for me. And I'll say, well, did you write me a letter or a column to put in it? This is a community newspaper, after all.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, I didn't know I could do that. I said, well, it's a free country. I said, I may completely disagree with you 100%, but I'll fight to the death to allow you to have your right to say so.
And your advertisers obviously see value in that because the advertising's gone up.
Yeah, we've had a couple of people try to say, oh, we're going to do a boycott. Well, knock yourself out. You know, do whatever you want to do. Controversy in my business sells.
Right.
You know, so if I don't get a couple of phone calls or emails from somebody complaining about my viewpoint, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You know, it sparks the discussion. You know, I've got liberal friends. And, you know, my fallback is always this. Listen, we can fight about abortion. We can fight about welfare. We can fight about all these things. But there's one thing we shouldn't be fighting about, and that's balancing the budget.
Absolutely.
You know, a drowning man can't save a sinking swimmer. It's that simple.
Very good.
And we're drowning
analogy.
In our own debt right now. I mean, let's put all other things aside, the welfare and everything else. let's balance a budget and then talk about how we can help people and spend money.
I've never seen a bipartisan definition of a problem any clearer than the deficit and spending. There's not a single person in Congress in any party that would tell you they would like to increase the deficit.
Exactly. And yet they continue to do
that. That's right. So how do you have such a uniform opinion of the fact that we need to address spending when none of that was brought to the table over the past 6 months in reality? And that's disturbing. And I think it goes to show that we do need to keep as citizens the pressure on, Democrats and Republicans alike. You may have different ideas about what you want to cut in terms of spending, but obviously from the short-term side in Michigan and the recent vote that you saw in the House, there are a lot of Republicans that believe long-term unemployment in this scenario is something they have to reconcile themselves to at some level. Well, maybe so, but let's discuss that before you vote on it at the 11th hour.
Right,
you know,
right.
Maybe spending in certain aspects of military or, you know, foreign intervention or Lend-Lease, World Bank, whatever, IMF. We can talk about all of these things, and I think we have an active citizenry that would enjoy that discussion. I have yet to hear it begin. And I think that's what we need to encourage.
Yeah, and the thing that drives me crazy now is the problem has gotten so big that the federal government, you know, on both sides of the aisle, now talk about 10 years. We're going to make this much deficit reduction in 10-year period. And it always never fails. It comes down to we're going to have a deficit reduction of $90 billion over the next 10 years with this move if we pass this. We're spending $1.4 trillion that we don't have this year. How does $90 billion in savings help?
Especially when that $90 billion is always in the last 7 to 10 years. It's never right up front.
Yes.
And that is always disturbing because the congressional budget cycle is on a two-year basis because that's the way it works. And any future Congress can undo what was done before. And I think that's really a ploy. I think these budget savings that you've always seen over your lifetime projected are what leads to Congress taking inaction. They fool themselves into thinking the problem's going away over the long term, and they fail to reconcile it during the terms they're there.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys, let's face it, there's plenty of long-termers in Congress, but after 10, 12, 15 years, a lot of them tend to go back into private life. They get to that age, and they don't reconcile the problems they created.
Yeah. I want one senator, and I know it won't be Carl Levin and Debbie Stabenow because they're both a couple of imbeciles. And they can come on this show anytime, and I'll ask them about their record. They're idiots. Those two couldn't balance a budget if their life depended on it. We're heading into 4 years with no budget coming out of the Senate. And how the people of Michigan, shame on us for voting that trollop back into office again, because she has no idea how to run a business. She has no idea how to run a government. They didn't even vote. And at least have the guts to put up a vote on the budget so that we can look at you and say you voted no on that. Or you voted yes on that. You know, it just drives me crazy. I want one person in the Senate and one person in the Congress to say, listen, we're spending $1.4 trillion a year. Stop talking about 10-year savings plans. You know, the 10-year savings plan should be $14 trillion over 10 years. That's the way it should be. I mean, anything that does not balance the budget is not cutting back on the deficit.
Right. I can't speak to Debbie Stabenow. I certainly would have never voted for her. it is kind of a Michigan mistake there.
And yeah. I voted for the first time when she ran. Mm-hmm. And I voted for – because I've always split my ticket. I vote for the person. I don't vote for mm-hmm. the party. And I remember Debbie Stabenow coming to our school board meetings. And I used to be on the Northfield Human Services Board, so mm-hmm. I went to some community. She was in our community. And it seemed like she cared. I had no idea at the time that she was incapable of – balancing a budget and incapable of looking at things from a big mm-hmm. perspective and saying we can't keep spending. It's common sense. You know what? There's such a lack of common sense in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It seems like we're getting a little bit here in Michigan. We've actually turned things around.
We have a wonderful governor.
Yeah, things have actually turned. Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of wish he had went ahead with this gun thing, but you know what? The right to work made me go 180 degrees. I won't call him Rhino Rick for a while.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was hard on the governor.
Solid businessman, though, and definitely putting his foot down in terms of putting Michigan on the right footing, I think. So,
yeah. I think I heard on the news that we're going to have a surplus this year.
Yeah.
But it's already spoken for to pay off some other bills
certainly,
or something. But that for the first time in how many years, you know, the debt that Jennifer Granholm sunk us in the hole.
Yes.
And I hear she's going to be looking for work. We should talk
Thank
about
goodness.
That. Yes.
I said the other day to somebody, I wish they would have found that footage of the dating game long before she ran for governor.
I know. I had that on my Facebook. I found it somewhere. I put it on my Facebook, and it was hilarious. The big hair. Well, it had to be the 80s, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But, and she stuck us in a hole and then walked away and went to Current TV. Now, let's quickly get into it. Derek, let's take a break. We'll hit this when we come back. You're on The Drift. We'll see you in a minute.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
In an effort to help the bereaved cope with loss and remember those who have passed, Hospice of Michigan is providing patient families with memory bears made from the clothing of their loved one. The bears, which are 8 inches tall and made in patch quilt style, are created by Hospice of Michigan volunteers using cotton, wool, fleece, or flannel clothing that help the bereaved recall happy memories with their loved ones. Memory bears are available free of charge to all families of Hospice of Michigan patients. There is a limit of one bear per family, and bears will be made in the order of requests received. Those interested in volunteering their time and talent to creating memory bears or another of HOM's many volunteer programs should call 313-578-6259. You can learn more about Hospice of Michigan by visiting hom.org. Forgiven and Set Free is a confidential Bible study designed to help women break free of the guilt and grief of abortion. Women who chose abortion for what they considered all the right reasons and even felt relief are not exempt from mourning the loss of their child. Forgiven and Set Free Bible study will meet Tuesday evenings from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. for 9 consecutive weeks beginning January 15th and lasting through March 5th. It'll be at St. Paul Youth House, 500 West Liberty, corner of Liberty and 3rd Street. There is no charge and you must register. To register or for a confidential consultation, call 734-994-8863 extension 14. To learn more, visit www.arborwomen.com.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community@whamradio.com or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108. Wham! Talk 1600. In touch with your community. You're catching the drift. Gary Wellings and the Drift. On Wham! Talk 1600. Call 734-822-1600 to join in the discussion.
And welcome back to the Drift. In the studio with me again this morning, John Hargan-Rader. John, thank you for coming in and sharing the airwaves with me this morning.
Thank you for inviting me, Gary.
So we were talking before about a little bit about Jennifer Granholm, and another bit of news this week was Al Gore, the biggest hypocrite on the planet, if you ask me, Al Gore, sold his Current TV, which was a Mickey Mouse TV station, if you ask me. I think if it hadn't been for the liberal-controlled media, he never would have had anything. But he gave Jennifer Granholm her own little TV show, on the Current TV network, and that's Current, C-U-R-E-R-A-E-N-T, not C-O-U like us. But he sold out to, of all companies, Al Jazeera Television.
Yep.
And now, Glenn, the odd thing is Glenn Beck was trying to buy his Current TV station because he wanted access to all the cable channels. Not because he liked anything that Al Gore did,
right?
But he wanted that access to the cable networks. And, of course, that's the immovable rock and the irresistible force coming at each other. There's no way that was going to fly. But Al Gore, being the complete hypocrite that he is, talking about global warming and not using oil, sells out to oil-backed Al Jazeera Television.
Right.
You know, for me, it's like, here's the new propaganda. You just gave access to the propaganda arm of Islamofascists into the American mainstream culture. You know, here we go.
Well, the only good side of that story is he's bringing some cash back from overseas to spend in our economy, I hope. But you're right. It's a good thing that I think that Granholm's show is no longer on the air. I don't miss it a bit. I think she had a larger following on Twitter than she did in listeners.
Probably. Now, what's amazing is Al Jazeera was so upfront about it. They said, we're getting rid of all the programming. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not saving anything of Al Gore's programming. It's just gone. And they're going to bring in all their crazy Islamic whatever. And you know, hey, it's a free country. Go ahead and knock yourselves out. I'm assuming and hoping that most of America, other than people who are of Muslim faith and enjoy that, won't watch it, won't see it, and will ignore it. I thought I heard at least one cable network said, well, we're canceling our contract with current TV anyways, because who really wants? I mean, Al Jazeera has, you know, from the get-go been a propaganda for the Muslim fanatics.
It has taken that flavor. It started out with that flavor. I guess, to be honest, I'm hoping that outside influence will change their perspective a little bit and put some of the rationalization in our perspective back into the Arab world. Big hope. I mean, it didn't work with Radio Free Europe in the East, but, you know, the best thing that could happen there is for that flow to go the other way, certainly not this way.
Yeah, what it comes down to is communication. You know, I'm always fond. One thing I never forgot about from world history class was the Mongol hordes ruled, you know, from Europe back to China. And when they conquered China, they became, instead of it becoming a new Mongol China, they got absorbed by the culture of China. And within a generation, it may have been a Mongol king, but he was a China. He was a Chinaman. You know what I mean? And I think Western culture, especially American culture, is like that. It is such the freedom. Our culture, despite the violence, despite the crazy sex that comes along with it, I think the very idea of freedom is so absorbing that if you expose it to people, within a generation, you're going to see the results of that. And I think the biggest mistake the United States has made is not exporting our culture enough. Will we get hammered for it? Sure we will. But why after or during the first Gulf War, we didn't put a couple of geostationary satellites over the Middle East and just start broadcasting in Arabic or Farsi or whatever languages we needed to Western culture? We should have.
Yeah, where is Voice of America that Ronald Reagan funded for the radio stations all over to do that, broadcasting into Cuba and everything else? That was a very good, you know, plan to expose people to our culture. My very good friend for many years, over 20 years, came from Syria. He's an engineer who got citizenship back in the 1980s. And, you know, I have plenty of examples of this. Very few people come to witness our culture and then return to Pakistan after they're students. And I think that says something for us. We do have a valid culture that permeates all of different types of cultures and religions and beliefs and civil liberties. So when people come here, they are absorbed by it and they enjoy it. How do we export that? Well, this selling this radio station Al Jazeera may not be that, but I would say that we should use broadcast media more to do that. Voice of America was a wonderful element. Maybe we should have taken over the television stations in Iraq rather than taking over the streets.
Even in Afghanistan, I mean, you know, instead of dropping bombs and bomblets, drop a bunch of handheld crank radios and begin broadcasting American culture in Arabic or Farsi or whatever languages they speak. They're Pashtun. You know, broadcast that. Because it's education. Until you educate those people that we are not evil, that we do care, that you can come in our country and worship freely. We don't have a problem with you building a mosque here, unless it's on the 9/11 grounds. But, you know, there are mosques popping up all over the place. We welcome all people, all religions. But they don't do that over there. Try building a new Catholic church in Saudi Arabia right now. Good luck with that. That's not going to happen. In Egypt, they're burning Christian churches. So, you know, it comes down to the education, and I don't think the United States is doing that. Educate those people. Why don't we have broadcasting over the Middle East? If nothing else, send reruns of Three's Company to them in Arabic until they get it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Is it dumbing down their population a little bit? Well, I guess like our own kids are dumbed down now.
Right.
But if you give those kids that opportunity to see our culture, to absorb our culture, they may not hate us so much.
We used to have student exchange programs. And if you actually look at it, when I was a student back in the 80s, Iraq and Iran were one of the two primary origin countries for students that came here and would go back under those types of programs. I think the problem is in that collegiate time period, most of the students we see that come here now stay. And that we call the brain drain. If we don't send the educated, smart people back to their country of origin, like Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
and they stay here to become math professors, those countries remain third world countries. The brain drain takes away those people that keep the electricity on, that plan their sewers, that get them out of the
third world.
The third world. And so I think that's a policy that the United States has to look at. Our immigration policy should not create countries where the extremists, like in Pakistan, take over and we take all their best doctors and engineers, because those are really the people that they need to substantiate a society that's peaceful and part of the modern world. But let's face it, our culture is so entertaining to people in terms of its freedom and openness and the accumulation and protection of personal wealth that they stay. And that's a great thing in one side, but it hurts us on the other side. We end up having to deal with the brain drain in those areas.
I never looked at it that way. I mean, maybe that's why they hate us so much, because we're taking their best and their brightest.
Well, certainly that the brain drain theory in India and Pakistan and the Middle East, those people come here as scientists and medical professionals and things like that, has not gone unnoticed.
Right. And I guess that's, you know, I always dislike it when people say, stop spending all that money overseas. We probably spend way too much overseas, mm-hmm. and we don't spend it right when we do send it overseas. But you can't ignore it, because if you just cut them off, you know, first, you can't go into confinement like that unless we are self-sufficient in oil and everything else. But you can't ignore those other sections of the world. Otherwise, they just grow to hate us even more.
They become isolated. I liked your idea of the hand crank radios. We did it all throughout Africa. We designed those things specifically to get the message out on immunization programs and to try and cut down on the violence in certain areas.
Right.
Let's do that. Let's.
If you want another one? Hand crank Nintendos, drop them by parachute to all the little kids, and they'll be out behind a boulder playing their Nintendos and getting lazy like our kids instead of going to the madrasas and learning to hate us. Hand crank Nintendo, somebody. I hope somebody's listening. All right, till next week, we're wrapping up another show. Thank you for tuning in. Go to thedailydrift.com, stay educated, stay informed, and we'll see you next week.